Dr. Marcotte,
this meeting is now being recorded.
Dr. Marcotte, I'll turn over the presentation to you now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Raj. It's a pleasure to be on the phone call today in Cincinnati. It's very sunny, but very cold, so keep warm. Today we're going to be speaking about some of the background around our quality improvement project that we did in Ohio, and some of the results of those of that project. Next slide. So today our goal is to understand the impact of optimizing antenatal corticosteroid reception rates in order to improve outcome in infants born preterm, and to review our OPQC antenatal steroid project results, and to introduce the antenatal corticosteroid toolkit that was developed in collaboration with OPQC and Heather Kaplan, and understand how the resources provided can help your individual organization improve antenatal administration of corticosteroids in your hospital. Next slide. So what we know is that antenatal corticosteroids are widely used and endorsed throughout the world and well established to improve outcomes for preterm infants, particularly those in developed industrialized countries where most deliveries occur within the hospital. Antenatal corticosteroids have been shown both in the laboratory and in humans to have protective effects on lungs, brain, and intestinal tracts of preterm infants, and have particularly been shown to reduce the incidence of respiratory distress syndrome, interventricular hemorrhage in very preterm babies, serious bowel disease like necrotizing enterocolitis, and have shown to reduce the risk of death in babies who have received antenatal corticosteroids and have delivered less than 34 weeks of gestation. And we'll come back to that as we talk about the cautions later in the presentation. Next slide. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is some of the basic science understanding of how antenatal corticosteroids help reduce the risk of these complications. What we know is that there are particularly two types of cells along the epithelial lining of the small airways, the alveolar airways, called type 1 and type 2 pneumocytes. And antenatal corticosteroids seem to accelerate their development, both structurally and biochemically. It improves lung mechanics by increasing the maximum lung volume and increasing compliance. It also improves gas exchange when the fetus converts to being a newborn and goes from a liquid environment to an air exchange environment. Type 2 pneumocytes particularly are responsible for producing surfactant, and we know that antenatal corticosteroids help induce the proteins that produce surfactant and the enzymes responsible for phospholipid synthesis. We know that babies that have received antenatal corticosteroids respond better to surfactant given to them in the newborn period. We know that antenatal corticosteroids also induce beta receptor development, which is important for alveolar fluid absorption and surfactant release. We know that it induces fetal lung antioxidant enzymes, which are important for immunity. And it upregulates sodium channels, which are important for lung fluid reabsorption. Next slide. Looking at the history of published reports on the effects of antenatal corticosteroids, we have to look back to the early 70s with a seminal paper reported by Liggins and Howie, which showed the improvement with the use of antenatal corticosteroids in babies who are born prematurely. In 1990, there was a meta-analysis that looked at all of the studies since 1972 and showed significant improvement in respiratory outcome and decreased infant mortality in babies that were exposed to antenatal corticosteroids and born preterm. In 1994, the NIH convened a consensus conference which came out with the first recommendations in the United States for the use, the widespread use of antenatal corticosteroids in babies that were at risk for preterm birth. In 2001, Gwynn did a study that looked at the use of multi-dose antenatal corticosteroids. And the reason that became a common event in high-risk centers was that we saw in both the original paper and in the meta-analysis that over time, the effects of antenatal corticosteroids waned the longer from administration to delivery in babies that were eventually delivered preterm. And so it became common that antenatal corticosteroids were repeated if 1 or 2 weeks went by and the risk of preterm birth continued to exist and the baby was expected to be born before 34 weeks. There were cautions in this because we began to see that there may have been, especially in animal models, growth restriction occurring in babies that had repeated doses of antenatal steroid exposure. In 2006, the NIH sponsored a multi-center study that Dr. Ron Wapner was the lead author on. This study was published and presented at SMFM, and the results suggested, because the study was stopped prematurely because of effects on fetal growth, that the optimal number of repeat courses was 1. In other words, any patient who is expected to deliver before 34 weeks should receive a course of antenatal corticosteroids when the risk increased, and then a repeat course would be given if the risk was still increased and 2 weeks had proceeded past the first dose. In 2011, ACOG opinion 475 came out, which suggested that all patients at risk for delivery before 34 weeks should receive at least 1 course of antenatal corticosteroids, and that if the risk persisted after 1 week, the course should be repeated 1 time. Recently, in fact, in this month's Green Journal, there was a paper reporting the results of application of this recommendation and the effects it had on babies. I'll talk about that shortly. There is currently an ongoing study looking at the use of antenatal corticosteroids in the late preterm period, that is, patients at risk for delivery at 35 and 36 weeks. Some studies, including a study done in our institution, suggested an increased risk of morbidity in babies exposed to antenatal corticosteroids after 34 weeks gestation. This study is expected to have results ready for presentation in approximately 1 year, so we'll know if there is benefit on a prospective randomized study for babies receiving antenatal corticosteroids in that late preterm period. Next slide. So the standard is, as I said, women likely to deliver a viable preterm infant between 24 and 34 weeks within the next 7 days should receive a course of antenatal corticosteroids. And that course, recommended by ACOG, most commonly is 2 doses of betamethasone, 12 milligrams, injected 24 hours apart, or 4 doses of dexamethasone, 6 milligrams in each dose, injected 12 hours apart. The second rescue course of antenatal corticosteroids should be used in pregnant women who received a first course more than 2 weeks earlier, are still less than 33 weeks gestation, and are expected to deliver within 1 week. Next slide. We began across our country looking at antenatal corticosteroid administration as a measure of hospital quality, and this was started throughout the country using information acquired from the National Quality Forum. The Joint Commission has included it in their perinatal bundle at the bottom of the slide, the PCO3. is a measurement of frequency of antenatal corticosteroids in babies delivered before 34 weeks gestation. The Ohio Department of Health began reporting publicly in Ohio Hospital Compare the results per hospital of the PCO3 rate. So many organizations have used and continue to use antenatal corticoid steroid administration in babies born before 34 weeks as a quality measure in obstetrics. Next slide. This is just an example of some data from the Ohio Hospital Compare. Ohio Hospital Compare stopped reporting data in 2012, and this is our most up-to-date information. This was right before the start of our project through OPQC. Next slide. So I wanted to review now the OPQC antenatal corticosteroid project, which, next slide, tried to show that we could improve documentation and administration of antenatal corticosteroids within a medical record in patients who were delivered before 34 weeks gestation. Just some background on Ohio Perinatal Quality Collaborative. It is a consortium of Ohio perinatal clinicians, both obstetricians, maternal fetal medicine, neonatologists and pediatricians, hospitals, and policymakers throughout the state. Our mission is that by using collaborative improvement science methods, we could reduce preterm births and improve the outcome of babies born at term and preterm throughout Ohio. And we wanted to do this as quickly as possible. We've been in existence since 2007, and we focused on population health. And the other thing that is relatively unique about our project is we continue to work with Vital Statistics to try to develop better and better birth registry data so that that can be used as our measures in terms of quality improvement. Our key partners are the Ohio Department of Health and Medicaid, Ohio Beacon Council and Ohio College of Medicine, Government Resource Center, the Ohio Hospital Association, and the Centers for Disease Control. Next slide. Our baseline data looking at vital record statistics and the Vermont Oxford showed that we were not reaching the goal that we had for at least 90% of patients who were delivering before 34 weeks receiving antenatal corticosteroids. When we looked at the 20 charter hospitals who participated in our project, it accounted for about 50% of the births. Our goal, our project aim, our SMART aim was to increase the percentage of women between 24 and 34 weeks gestation who received antenatal corticosteroids before a preterm delivery. Next slide. The first part of our project was a retrospective chart review where we asked 15 of our charter hospitals to review over five-month period, all the charts of patients who delivered before 34 weeks gestation. We found 466 deliveries, and as expected, approximately 90%, 89.5% of those patients received at least one dose of antenatal corticosteroids before delivery. We also found that approximately 10% received no doses. Next slide. This created the initiative to move forward with a prospective project where we looked at 19 of our charter member hospitals to participate. And the project was conducted between November of 2011 and June of 2013. We used quality improvement methodology to optimize the rate of antenatal corticosteroid administration. And as we'll talk, we did much investigating into that 10% who were not receiving antenatal corticosteroids to see if we could intervene in those pregnancies also. Next slide. So the place I want you to focus in this slide is around the key drivers. These are the things that our content and QI experts felt were the key drivers that was going that were going to allow us to reach our goal of optimizing antenatal corticosteroid use. We believe that the first and foremost important part was to look at our documentation system and make sure that we had a process in each of these hospitals that allowed us to streamline the documentation of all patients who received antenatal corticosteroids. We wanted to make sure that we optimized the identification of the appropriate antenatal steroid candidates. We wanted to optimize the appropriate time for antenatal corticosteroid administration. We wanted to make sure we optimized the efficiency of administration. In other words, when we had a patient who presented who was a candidate who needed to receive antenatal corticosteroids, we could get the steroids to them as quickly as possible. And we also wanted to make sure that the public and our providers and hospitals were aware of the benefits and the risks of the use of antenatal corticosteroids. And I think this is a good point to stop and just make the clear statement that the goal in quality improvement is to try to provide the right care to the right patients at the right time and minimize or prevent risks to patients who should not receive an intervention. And this is a key point when we talk about antenatal corticosteroid use. Next slide. So what we saw based on our hand collection of data was that our sites were administering antenatal corticosteroids to the right patients at the right time, at least 90% of the time, in each of the months that we measured, except for January of 2013. Next slide. Looking at our birth registry data, we have a different story, and that is that documentation during our project improved significantly at least 2 points. The first was in January of 2010, when Ohio Hospital Compare was launched. We believe that public reporting was shown in this project to actually improve the accuracy of documentation. In January of 2012, when our project began, we also saw another boost in the documentation and administration of antenatal corticosteroids. And again, because this is a quality improvement project, we cannot say directly a cause and effect. We can only say that there was an association with these two events, an improvement in the birth registry, the birth certificate data showing that antenatal corticosteroids were given approximately 90% of the time to patients who needed to get it, those that delivered before 34 weeks gestation. Next slide. Next, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Heather to allow her to talk about the development of the antenatal corticosteroid toolkit.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I assume you will tell me if you can't hear me out in cyberspace, but I'll keep going.
We can hear you.
Okay, great. So as Mike said, we had a really successful project as part of Ohio Perinatal Quality Collaborative working with 19 of our 20 charter member hospitals to optimize antenatal steroid administration and make sure that we're documenting that appropriately both in the chart and in the birth registry data. And so what we did is wanted to put together a toolkit that really documented our strategies for success during the project and also shared a little bit about what we learned from those hospitals that, as Mike showed, really a majority of the time, even before the project began, were getting steroids into those women that were eligible more than 90% of the time. So what is it that those hospitals were doing to achieve those rates of antenatal steroid administration? So we called that all that together and have put that in a toolkit that's available on our website. And the web address will be shared at the end of my portion of the talk, and you'll get the slides as well so that you'll be able to access that toolkit. Next slide. So, again, it was created by the Ohio Perinatal Collaborative, our goal is to share the successful changes and give you some real concrete tools to help you guys in other hospitals either improve or maintain your rates if you also are optimally achieving rates of ANCS administration, getting the ANCS to the right women at the right time. But really, we've got some concrete tools in there to help you make sure that you have a good documentation system, that you're really identifying those women that are eligible, that you're getting antenatal steroids into the eligible women in a timely and efficient manner, as Mike mentioned, and that making sure that everyone really knows the evidence and is aware of both the risks and benefits of antenatal steroids. Next slide. So the first set of tools that we gave you are really some tools that you can use to optimize antenatal steroid administration at your hospital. Like if you wanted to replicate what we did as OPQC at your own hospital, we've given you all the tools that you need to do so, to do your own kind of QI project to improve documentation and optimize administration. Next slide. With OPQC, when we do quality improvement with all of our quality improvement projects, we use the model for improvement to guide our quality improvement work. And really fundamental to the model for improvement is these three questions. So first, what's your aim? What are we trying to accomplish? Measures, how are we going to know that a change is an improvement? And then changes, what changes are we going to implement that are going to result in improvement? And the tool, the first tool that we provide you is really going to help you fulfill this mission using the model for improvement to make sure that you're optimizing rates of antenatal steroid administration. It's going to help you ensure that you have the right systems in place to identify the candidates for treatment and make sure that you're documenting that you've given antenatal steroids when in fact you have. Next slide. So this is the tool that we use to make sure that we're following the model for improvement in our quality improvement activities. This is just another version of that key driver diagram that Mike showed you on the first slide, perhaps a little bit simpler. Again, at the top, if you're going to conduct a project, the aim that we used is to make sure that all infants who are born in the appropriate time frame are receiving appropriate treatment so that we reduce perinatal morbidity and mortality, as Mike went through. Again, the key drivers, which Mike talked about, are there in the left on the blue boxes. And then there's a list of interventions that teams tried through the OPQC ANCS project to actually target those drivers and make sure that women were receiving steroids when appropriate. So again, we'll focus on each of these in a little bit more detail, but around creating a documentation so that systems so that every time that steroids are administered, there it's documented in the chart in a standard fashion, and then that's translated to the birth certificate. For identifying appropriate candidates, making sure that your hospital's in agreement of who are the appropriate candidates and when you should be giving steroids. Identifying appropriate time for antenatal steroid administration, so in making sure that there's easy ways to get steroids and making sure that we're providers are consistently identifying candidates every time and getting steroids on board, and then again, awareness of risks and benefits. Next slide. Again, if you think back to the model of improvement, model for improvement two slides ago, a key part of any effort to optimize antenatal steroids is really knowing your hospital rates of administration. So you can't improve what you can't measure. So there's lots of different ways that you guys at your individual hospitals can know your rates of administration. You can do some hand data collection, and one of the tools that we provided you is the actual data collection form that OPQC participating sites use to track their rates of antenatal steroid administration. You can use state vital statistics or birth registry data. If your hospital is submitting the Joint Commission Perinatal Core Measure Set, as Mike mentioned, PCO3 is a way that you can track your rates of antenatal steroids administration. And if you're in a hospital associated with a neonatal intensive care unit or a special care nursery that's a participant in the Vermont Oxford Network registry, that registry collects data from the baby's perspective of rates of antenatal steroid administration, and that would be another place to assess your hospital's rates of administration for antenatal steroids. Next slide. So again, we're providing you in the toolkit with the actual data collection form that our teams used. It's going to help you track your rates of administration of antenatal steroids. It also was a lot more detailed if you really want to delve in to really understand the characteristics of your patient population and who's receiving steroids and who isn't. It'll help you understand whether women are receiving a full or a partial course of steroids and help you really understand data about the time interval from when a woman presents to delivery and how that impacts your ability to administer antenatal steroids. So again, this is in the toolkit. Next slide. And you can use this form if you'd like to really delve in deep and really attack this with your own local QI project. Next slide. So next we're going to kind of go through a little bit each of those drivers on the key driver diagram, and I'm going to share with you a little bit about what our sites told you as to kind of, or told us about the changes that they made first here, focusing on how they work to establish an antenatal steroids documentation system. Next slide. So again, why is this important? Really, if you go back to that kind of old insurance mantra, if it's not documented, it's not done. So not only do you want to make sure that you're getting steroids into to women who are eligible in time, you want to make sure that you're documenting it. And it's really important both to ensure that a treatment that's actually necessary isn't missed or that too many doses of ANCS aren't given. You want to make sure that everyone on the medical team is aware that steroids have been given, when they've been given, and how many courses or doses the woman's received. So that's one important reason for documenting treatment or administration of ANCS. The other reason is really to make sure that what's documented in the medical record is translated to our birth registry or birth certificate data, because really if we're documenting it appropriately and improving the accuracy of our state vital statistics records, it's really important because these state vital statistics records are actually used for quality improvement, and our state partners are using this information to make decisions about public policy. So that birth registry data is really important. So we want to have it documented correctly in the medical record so that everyone on the care team is aware of what's going on and providing the optimal care, not missing a dose or not giving too many doses, and then also for our state partners so that they know what's going on with women across the state and actually using the correct information to drive policy. Next slide. Some of what our sites were telling us when they stumbled across issues with documentation, they were related to variation in where antenatal steroids was documented in the chart, that it wasn't documented consistently in the same place, which made it hard for the care team to find whether steroids were actually given and hard for the birth registry abstractors to find that steroids were given. There was actually variation in the way steroids were documented in the chart, when they were documented, what abbreviations were used, what language was used. And then the difficulty of reflecting in the hospital record when the woman is admitted into labor and delivery when antenatal steroids were given at a previous location, either at a transferring facility or in an outpatient setting. And so when the antenatal steroids are not documented consistently in the medical record, this is going to lead to also inaccurate documentation in other sources like your Joint Commission measures or your state birth registry data. Next slide. So some of the things that OPQC sites worked on to improve documentation were standardizing where antenatal steroids were recorded within the medical record, making it consistently reported on the history and physical, giving birth registry staff actual access to all the pertinent sections of the medical record so that they knew where to look in that standard location and actually could look there to make sure that that data is transferring from the medical record to the birth registry. One of the things we stumbled across was some of the birth registry abstractors actually didn't know the medical terminology. And so if they saw betamethasone or dexamethasone in the chart, didn't actually know that was equivalent to antenatal steroids. So sites did a lot of education with the birth registry staff. They also created avenues so that the clinical staff and birth registry staff could communicate more effectively. So if the birth registrar had a question about the treatment the pregnant woman received that needed to be recorded on the birth registry, she had access to someone clinical who could help interpret that information and find it in the chart. And then lots of our sites did auditing of their birth registry data for accuracy to ensure that they had the right processes in place so that the data were transferring correctly from the medical record to the birth registry. Next slide. So one of the tools that we have given you is an example of a flow chart that you can use for your birth registry staff to help them go through what the process is specifically for antenatal steroids and in identifying where the antenatal steroids are recorded in the chart and in which women and actually translating that into appropriate documentation in the birth registry. So this tool is really going to help you identify the sequence of events in a process. That's what a flowchart can help you do. And in this case, it's specific to antenatal steroid documentation in the birth registry. And if you pull your team together, both your clinical team and your birth registrar, it'll help you take a look at this in more detail and really figure out what you need to do to get that accuracy up to 100% so that what's documented in the medical record is actually making it to the birth certificate with respect to antenatal steroids. Next slide. So I know this is a little bit too blurry and too detailed to go through on the webinar, but just know that this is there in the toolkit if you want to really focus on improving your documentation at your institution so that the good work that you're doing getting antenatal steroids into those eligible women is actually documented in the medical record and on the birth registry. Next slide. So next we're going to talk a little bit about some of the more clinically focused changes that teams made around optimizing antenatal steroid administration and some of what we learned from those sites that were already doing a really good job identifying and administering steroids. Next slide. So one of the first things that is on our key driver is really making sure that you're identifying eligible women. It's really crucial or critical to the treatment's optimal use. So some of the interventions that can help ensure that eligible women are actually appropriately identified include empowering nurses to recognize an opportunity to give antenatal steroids. When we talked to some of the participating teams, they were always telling us, you know, it's the nurse who's in triage who's saying, hey, I need you to come assess this woman really quickly. We need to get steroids ordered and administered. So it's that nurse speaking up who's the first contact point for the patient saying, there's an opportunity here we don't want to miss. Also, we talked about standardizing your hospital's approach to identifying eligible women and what that time frame is that indicates imminent delivery. So having a conversation with the physicians at your hospital, just thinking about reminding them about the ACOG opinion and that how are we going to identify women 24 to 34 weeks who are at risk for preterm labor within the next week, and what is our personal hospital approach to imminent delivery so that we have an approach to say that if this woman comes in and we think she's going to deliver within 2 hours, we either still want to give steroids or we don't, but standardizing your approach to that. And then the other critical piece, particularly for those of you that are on the phone from either level one or level two facilities who are going to transfer some of the preterm infants or the smallest preterm infants, is really thinking about having standardized communication processes from one hospital to another so that steroids, that women who are eligible for steroids are appropriately identified either at the referring, ideally at the referring facility so that steroids can be given prior to transport. Next slide. So with that in mind, we've given you a handful of other tools that you can potentially use or use to mock up your own of standardized forms that you could use at the time of transfer to make sure that you're identifying women who are eligible for steroids and hopefully getting that first dose in at a level one or level two facility prior to transfer. And the forms are really designed to standardize communication, not just about antenatal steroids, but about some of the other things that you really want to have standard communication about and really can help you consistently and reliably report important clinical information, particularly about steroids, to make sure that women aren't missed who are appropriate candidates. Next slide. So we have some examples. If you're on the phone from a level one hospital that's going to transfer preterm infants or a level two hospital that's going to transfer infants less than 32 weeks, here are some tools that you could use as a referring hospital to make sure that you're providing standard information to that accepting hospital. On the left is a nursing transport form that you could use to make sure that you're giving complete sign out to the receiving nurse. And then you can see, probably not very clearly, but in the assessment section, there's a piece where you can report on antenatal steroids and when the doses were given, both either the first dose or the second dose. And on the right is a form that you could potentially use to send along with the medical record as a good summary for the accepting hospital of all the critical bits of information. And again, in the assessment section, there's a portion where you can document that steroids were given and the dates and times of those doses. Next slide. We've also given a tool if you're an accepting hospital on the phone, a level three facility, and you're the physician, let's say, that's taking information about a potential transfer. Again, this is going to standardize that communication that you're going to have with the referring physician. Lots of information included here, but again, at the bottom around your recommendations, a specific call out to antenatal steroids. So making sure that the referring facility is giving antenatal steroids before transferring the woman if she is a candidate. So, again, standardized communication to make sure that steroids aren't missed for an eligible woman. Next slide. Mike also mentioned that a key part to our project was really making sure that in those women that are eligible for steroids, that we're getting them the medication in a timely and efficient manner. So our hospitals that we worked with that had the highest rates of antenatal steroids really tended to emphasize reliability and efficiency. And some of the ways that they did that were by using reminders like posted signs that would heighten urgency for administration. There was one example of a site who put a sign up in triage that said "got steroids" with a question mark, kind of like that "got milk" advertisement, just trying to remind people in the setting where they're at to think about steroids. Other hospitals worked to make sure that antenatal steroids were really readily available, either by stocking it on the unit in a Pyxis or by having a particular system in place that would ensure that they could consistently get it quickly from pharmacy. And then also making sure that the appropriate clinicians are available to assess a woman who comes in preterm labor in a timely fashion so that the steroids could get ordered and then get given. Next slide. Again, one of our key drivers was really around raising awareness of risks and benefits. In the hospitals that we worked with who had high rates of ANCS administration, all members of the care team knew about the benefits of antenatal steroids and were watching for opportunities to administer. And this is not just the physicians, but the nurses. We talked about empowering nurses really on the front line to speak up and identify women as candidates, trainees, and then even patients themselves. Next slide. The other piece that we're going to talk a little bit about is this idea of building a high reliability culture. And this idea of reliability is a science, really, that comes from other industries where they have to make sure that things are done consistently every time, industries like aviation or nuclear power plants. And we heard a lot of the same things in our hospitals who had high rates of antenatal steroids that sometimes you hear about the culture of those other industries where they're sure to do the right thing or to implement their processes consistently every time. So in our hospitals that had high rates of antenatal steroid administration, all of the members of the care team, like we saw on the previous slide, are really extra vigilant about making sure that eligible women are receiving antenatal steroids. Sometimes that's called or described as team members having a preoccupation with failure, that they don't It's that just that you hear it kind of in the background that people don't want to miss someone who had antenatal steroids. And this is one of the comments that one of our QI team physician leads from one of our charter hospitals said, it's this idea that when there's instances where the team is involved and they're failing to get steroids on board, that they really feel frustration. It's this idea that we don't want to miss someone. And then we're really always on the lookout for missed opportunities and reviewing those cases when there is a missed opportunity to make sure that they can make any changes that are necessary so that it doesn't happen again. Next slide. So again, we said this a little bit before, but reliability for healthcare is really the capability of a process or procedure to perform its intended function every time. And so again, as Mike said, our goal is to ensure that the right thing happens every time and that it's not really us as individuals, but it's that we have systems in place to make sure that this is happening every time. It's not about working harder. It's about making sure we have those systems in place so that we are identifying eligible women correctly every time and getting steroids in correctly every time. Next slide. And it's again, it's not about working harder. And if you think about steroids, just click one more time so that there's some animation here. So if you think about for steroids, right now we want to make sure that, again, that less than maybe 5 out of 100 times that we're missing someone who's really eligible. It's not really just about us working harder. We have to have processes in place so that we're consistently identifying women and getting steroids in. And from these other high reliability organizations, there are some processes or systems that have been clearly identified to work when you're really looking for not missing many women. And if you're going to miss more women, it's really at that time, you know, it kind of where we're at now or in the past with only rates of administration of less than 90%, we can do that pretty well just by working hard and everyone being on board and wanting to get steroids into eligible women. But if we really want to make sure that it's happening consistently, we need things like checklists or process redundancy, or working to, like we said on the other slide, to identify cases where steroids were missed and learn from them, and making it easy to do the right thing, like keeping steroids stocked on the unit in Apixis, and standardizing your process, like we talked about, having everyone on board agree about who eligible women are and what your time frame is for imminent delivery, when you're going to give steroids versus when you're not. Next slide. So again, this is really one of the things that we heard from our sites, that hospitals that were really doing well with OPQC, getting steroids in more than 90% of the time, one of the key things that they were doing was, again, being on the lookout for missed opportunities and formally reviewing those cases. These are just two quotes from some of our participants. The first one saying, you know, we always wrote off that you didn't get steroids because there wasn't time. But then when they really started to look at individual cases, it became clear that really there was sometimes something else there, and there was time to give, but they didn't think about it. So that identified some potential for change that they could build into their system to reach more eligible women. And then another said, you have a sense of what you're doing, and then you really have to look at what you're actually doing to see where the problems are. And sometimes they wouldn't have tumbled onto some of the things that they did without actually looking at where they were missing. So it's, again, that idea of a preoccupation with failure and looking out for places where you might have missed and what could you have learned from that. Next slide. So one of the tools that we used in the OPQC project that we've actually provided for you in the toolkit were what we call CSIs, or corticosteroid investigations. So that actually helped our teams, again, track the causes of missed opportunities to administer antenatal steroids and help reduce the gap between the eligible women who are receiving steroids and those who are not. And again, it's not. In some cases, there's probably instances where a woman's going to come in and deliver rapidly, which you'll see, and there it's difficult to get steroids on board and perhaps not useful to get steroids on board in that case. So there's going to be some times when there isn't a change that you could have made, but there are cases where there is something that you could learn that you could use to change your process to reach an eligible woman. Next slide. And again, this is just some quotes of some of what our teams learned from doing these CSIs. So an example was when they missed a dose, they would go back and look at why, and then they would actually refer those to their OBQA to review how they could improve on that. And here's an example of one where they actually did come out with a good idea of something they could have done. So they had a miss where a woman who came in precipitous labor was transferred from one of that hospital's sister hospitals in their system. And when they reviewed the miss and did a QA, they found that perhaps they could have had betamethasone stocked in the emergency room at the other hospital so that they could have administered steroids before the woman came and delivered. So again, finding things as you review these misses is really critical to optimizing rates of antenatal steroids. Next slide. So here is that form. Again, it's included in the toolkit to help you with identifying the reasons for why there may or may not have been a miss and learning from those reasons. Next slide. And the ones that you're really going to want to focus on are those where there's systems failures, as you can see here. So in our OPQC project, we had about 283 patients who didn't get steroids and completed a CSI on 149 of them. And as you would expect, almost three-quarters didn't get steroids because there was a short interval from when they presented to delivery. But there were instances where antenatal steroids wasn't given at a referring hospital, two instances, and that's potentially fixable. cases where there was an admission diagnosis where the woman wasn't expected to deliver and the condition rapidly changed. Again, those were cases where perhaps you could investigate and see if there were clues that maybe the woman was going to deliver and you could have given steroids early. And then there were, in fact, 6 cases or 4% of the cases where it wasn't ordered or was ordered and not given, where the system just failed. And these are cases where you really could identify appropriate changes that you could make in your system to ensure that this doesn't happen. Next slide. So again, our toolkit is available on the website. If you go to our OPQC website under projects in the OB antenatal corticosteroid project tab, you'll find the toolkit there. And also this link will be included when the slides are posted on the website. Next slide. So I'm going to turn it back over to Mike just to close out with some final thoughts and opportunity for questions.
Thanks, Heather. So I just wanted to mention a couple other things in a recent paper that was published in the Green Journal this month. But we just wanted to make sure that everyone was aware, and we think that the antenatal corticosteroid project in our current project around trying to identify women at risk for preterm birth probably has some links. And some of those links include looking for opportunities to improve access to care, to make sure women are aware of the signs and symptoms of preterm birth, especially if we know they're at risk because of their history or because they have a short cervix or they're on progesterone for some reason. Those patients should be provided with more information so that hopefully they can identify that something's not going right and they can get to the hospital and we can get them the steroids before they deliver preterm. But we know that there are some real limits to our knowledge and science around identifying women who are going to deliver preterm. So we need to find women sooner and proactively anticipate those who are at high risk for delivery. I had a patient just yesterday that I was working with, the residents, who was 31 weeks, came in with contractions. Her cervix was closed. She was contracting. She wasn't real uncomfortable. The resident said, let's just send her home. And I said, well, how do you know you shouldn't give her antenatal corticosteroids? She's 31 weeks and having contractions. And so we used the transvaginal ultrasound to measure her cervix, and when we identified that her cervix was normal, we did not give her antenatal corticosteroids. But if we would have found that she had a short cervix, even at 31 weeks, we would know that she's at high risk for delivering in the next 2 weeks, and therefore we would give her antenatal corticosteroids. Even if we don't do anything else, we at least then have given her the steroids. So that kind of processes, which weren't part of our antenatal corticosteroid project, are actually the processes we want to make sure so that we can reduce the number of women who don't get antenatal corticosteroids. Next slide. So just before we get to questions, I just wanted to make sure if anybody had read the commentary by Dr. Goldenberg and Dr. McClure in this month's Green Journal, or the paper that was written from Dr. Razes from Nova Scotia that looked at some of the concerns we have with overuse of antenatal corticosteroids. So what they showed in Nova Scotia was that over 50% of women who received antenatal corticosteroids because of a concern for increased risk a preterm birth before 34 weeks, actually delivered beyond 34 weeks, delivered at term. And the reason that that study was even conducted was that a paper was published in the Cochrane Review several years ago suggesting that patients who received antenatal corticosteroids but then delivered beyond 36 weeks gestation had a 2.6-fold increased risk of neonatal death. Now, that result was not statistically significant, but another paper was published this past year from third world countries where the use of antenatal corticosteroids was attempted to be used in patients at risk for preterm birth in that population. The majority of those women did not deliver in the hospital, but the results suggested that those babies who ended up delivering later in pregnancy than the 34 weeks actually had an increased risk of neonatal mortality, and both the mothers and the babies were at increased risk for infection. So I think one of the key questions that we did not address in our study but needs to continue to be looked at is how do we best find those women who are going to deliver preterm and give the steroids to those women and not to women who are having some signs or symptoms but then end up delivering at term. So I'll just leave you with that because that's a perplexing question that we don't know the answer to, and we'll open the phones to questions that you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Marcotte and Dr. Kaplan, for that excellent presentation. So as Dr. Marcotte said that this is a great time to ask the question of our faculty, you can press star 6 to come off of mute to ask it personally, or you may enter it in the chat box, and we can have the questions addressed. Additionally, there's a hand raiser on the chat box just above your name, so if you can click that as well. Jess, do we have any questions?
As of right now, there is not.
Okay. Well, we wanted to thank you all for joining us today, and as Dr. Kaplan pointed out, a copy of the ANCS Toolkit and the presentation are both available on our website under the projects under ANCS. So please go and access this wonderful toolkit, and thank you once again, Dr. Kaplan, Dr. Marcotte, for joining us today, and thank you to all for joining us as well.